This episode of Retronauts is brought to you by Harry's.
This week on Retronauts, how sharper than a plumber's paper cut. Welcome to this paper-thin edition of Retronauts. I am your host, Nadia Oxford. With me are two esteemed guests. First of all, we have our good friend, Stuart Gipp. Say hello, Gipp.
Oh, hello. Hello. It's Gipp, actually, but that's okay.
Gipp, I'm so sorry.
That's okay. It's good. It means that you have reread, and that's a good thing.
But you're more the zzzz than I say.
Yeah, it's okay. More sort of French, except not in any way, on any level.
Yeah, just kind of like, you got the sophistication, but I'll remember that. Yeah, also have...
You're more Jiff and less Skiff.
Well, yeah, now you just spoiled your presence, because I have to say I have my husband here as well, David Oxford. Say hi.
Hello.
Tell us about yourself. I'm glad to have you on the show. We've been married for 10,000 years.
Give or take.
Yeah, yeah. But I wanted you both here because you're both, as I understand it, and as I can vouch for David, huge fans of Paper Mario, The Thousand-Year Door, which is our topic today, especially because there is a remake coming out in 2024. Are you guys excited for this remake?
I'm very excited about it. I'm excited about the Mario RPG remake as well. I think we're eating good, basically. Right. Yes. They're both looking good. I mean, the Thousand-Year Door, all it really needs is just to be re-released more or less as is, but maybe HD'd a bit, you know? Yeah. I don't think I need to change much else, but I'm pretty sure we're going to get into that, so I'll leave it for now.
Yeah, for sure. David, I know you're excited.
I think I'm still in the shocked phase that they're even doing it, but much less excited.
Yeah, but to restate here, we are gathered here today to talk about Paper Mario: Thousand Year Door. It is a beloved GameCube RPG developed by Intelligent Systems and published by Nintendo in 2004. It's the second Paper Mario game following the first on the N64. Some would argue that it's the quote-unquote last real Paper Mario RPG. We'll get into that, I'm sure.
Tut.
Exactly. No, I have opinions as well. But Thousand Year Door was directed by Ryota Kawade of Intelligent Systems. Chief artist is Chie Kawabe, who is also illustrated the first game as well as the Advance Wars games. Composers are Yuka Tsuyuko, who now does a whole lot of like Fire Emblem music, and Hironobu Suzuki. Paper Mario is the progenitor of the time's hit mechanics, and Thousand Year Door kind of kept that action going with button presses. You also equipped a bunch of badges to boost your power. You have a lot of friends to help you in battle, each one wields some kind of special skill. I always stuck with Koops, though. So we'll talk a little bit more about characters in just a moment. But yeah, my weakness about Mario RPG, about Thousand Year Door, is that I really stuck with Koops. He's just such a tank as well as a tank buster. He's my homeboy, and he's wearing a jumper somehow. Who is your like go-to companion, if you guys remember?
I think it's okay to call it Mario RPG because, like, what Paper Mario in Japan was Mario RPG 2, right? Is that what I'm right about? Or was it? But then this would be Mario RPG 3, so it's fine. It's not a problem.
It's kind of like calling Mario World Mario 4.
But Mario and Luigi came out before this, so is that Mario RPG 3? Who knows? Cast it to the internet; they will decide. what was the question? Madame Flurry, because of reasons.
Oh, two really good big reasons.
Yeah. I mean, there's something just unreal about playing a Nintendo sort of family game where you have like a wind spirit with you know what I'm talking about. It's just there's something almost transgressive about that, you know.
Nintendo is really the kings of plausible deniability. Like all of their characters, huge dump trucks these days. So it's very much on purpose. David, I know your favorite's already Goombella.
Yep.
Why did you like her?
Mostly for the tattle ability and just getting her comments on every little thing in the game. She would be the one I'd keep by my side. Not to mention that same ability, I believe, was what let you see the life meters for enemies. So naturally, you want to have her up front and then maybe switch to someone else after, you know, getting things figured out.
Yeah, I remember I tried to use Miss Mouse as well because I just love the fact her tail was a heart. And uh-huh. I like the mouse characters from Super Mario in general. But
yeah, the whole lot's pretty good. I like the little spunky Yoshi guy.
Yeah.
Miss Mouse was good. Gosh, who else was there?
Vivian was. Yeah.
Oh, Vivian. She's like a topic unto herself.
Yeah,
my memory has escaped me. Was Vivian a partner character or just an NPC? I can't remember.
She's a partner character.
She's a partner character. Right, yeah, she's a partner character.
Her ability, I think, was analogous to what was her name? Lady Bo from the first game. Like, she could make you invisible there while Vivian kind of pulls you into the shadows.
Yeah, she's a shadow siren, which is a really cool,
name
for a species of RPG character. Yeah. While we're talking just about. Go ahead, David.
I just got to mention on the Mario RPG 2 thing, they did change the name in Japan before it was released to Mario Story. So
okay, like Yoshi's Story. Gotcha.
Yeah.
Everything was a story back then. Everything is still a story. It's a never-ending story, you might even say. Yeah. Just kind of briefly, or it's not going to be brief, but I'll just have you spill your guts and tell me why Paper Mario Thousand Year Door means... I mean, I know both of you like it, obviously. Why it means so much to you. David, why don't you start?
Oh gosh, I think when I played it, it was like back when I was just like really getting into Mario, just more and more, and the way it really expanded the world and the kind of scope of the characters with all the different types of, you know, Toads and Goombas and Koopas and just everything. It was just like, I've always been really big into the world of Mario, sometimes more than Nintendo themselves, it would seem. And just the game was like pure like candy for me.
Yeah,
it was a feast.
It's extremely imaginative, something that I'll talk about when I get into it. But Stuart, why don't you talk a little bit about why?
I mean, I have an interest. I think it's interesting because it happened to me, therefore. It's narcissistically, I think it's interesting. But my sort of journey with this game has been a bit up and down, because when I originally played it back on the GameCube, I really liked it. I played it start to finish pretty much all the time that I was able to play. I was playing this. It's not a short game by any means. And I made it all the way through to the final boss, got the final boss down to 2 HP left, and then I think I rolled 3 poison mushrooms and died. So I was like, you know what? I'm never playing this game again in my entire life. Of course, I would have gone back, but I just didn't. I was like, you know what? I'm calling that done. That's like BS. I don't care anymore. Because there was a lot of game before that boss fight. There's a lot of cutscene to try again. Yeah. I really didn't want to do it. But anyway, more to the point. I sort of went through a period where I, by proxy, kind of resented this game because of the amount of crap that the subsequent games get, which I loved. I think Sticker Star is like a 10 out of 10. It's one of my favorite Nintendo games I've ever played.
Yeah, you and Parrish both will die for Sticker Star.
And I apply that to Color Splash. I apply that to Origami King. I think they're all wonderful games. I recognize the criticisms of them, and I think they're valid. I think they're very valid criticisms. I completely understand why they would put people off them. But for me, the script, the gameplay, just like top tier, absolutely great. I can overlook the little mechanical oddities like the card stuff in Color Splash. I can overlook that because the rest is worth it. But then, of course, when this remake gets announced, part of me is like, oh god, they're validating all these. You know, I know it's not fair, I know it's silly, but that's how I felt in a sense. I secretly was like, oh, they validated this. But then, of course, when this subject for this podcast comes up, I thought I'll go back and replay it for the first time in a long, long time, and it's really good. Isn't it? Like, what a game this is. It's like ceaselessly creative, and it's so well written. And the script is actually better than I remember it being. I remember it being a bit staid, but it's not in the slightest. It's like full of character. Gumbella's like attitude is just so endearing as well. And even little things in the early game, like when you go to get the stone keys and the Thwomp turns into like a game show host and it has like Who Wants to Be a Millionaire kind of references and stuff like that. They even take like that sort of what should be quite a boring scenario and they sort of jazz it up. And that's even before you get to like the Bowser stuff or the Peach stuff.
Yeah.
Or how the fact that every chapter really does play out like a separate story that you play through. I mean, I don't think it's perfect. I think there's way too much back and forth.
There's a lot of back and forth, a lot.
That's the main criticism I have of it. And to be completely frank, I don't like the combat that much, but I feel like the rest of the game is worth it to push through that, because I'm not a fan of... Well, I mean, I'm a fan of the fact that you can just randomly get hit by the scenery falling down or like a sandbag falling on you. That's funny. In theory, it's funny. When it causes you real problems in a difficult fight, that bothers me. Because that's not something you should have to guard against, really. But there's so much going on in the combat that it just makes my head spin, to be honest. There's a lot of like variables. But no, I'm getting off track. It's great. I've always liked it. I like the sequels more because I like that kind of gameplay more, where it's more like an adventure. It's more like a kind of adventure game than an RPG. But I do again recognize the criticisms of the sequels, and I think they're completely fair enough. And I see why this one is held up as it is. I'm really looking forward to the remake because it's going to be. I'm a little bit worried they're going to censor it a lot. But not in that kind of gamer sort of like, oh no, they put clothes on this child. How dare they? Kind of gamer thing.
Yeah.
It's more in a sort of like going to like Rogueport and seeing the gallows right there in the middle. Like,
I think we've already seen like the Rogueport and the gallows right there. What I was wondering, and this kind of ties into what you're saying about the game being hilarious, is that the chalk outline of the, I know I say it all the time, but it's the funniest thing to me of the toad. Now, what they might censor is that in the American version, that chalk outline had a spatter of blood. No, it didn't have a spatter of blood. In the Japanese version, it had that spatter. So I'm wondering, okay, will we have that? Because some people are already noticing that, like some things, like for example, the, I think his name was Tech. He had a blue eye before because he looked so much like Hal. Now he, in the remake, he seems to have a red eye. So I'm assuming they're going to keep as much the Japanese as they can, but I don't know if the blood will pass.
Yeah.
David, do you say something?
Oh, I was just going to say that I have noticed other people pointing out, actually, it seems lately that Nintendo is kind of like veering more towards the Japanese side on like some of their re-releases and stuff, like the box art. People are noticing it's more the Japanese style, like across the globe instead of, like, you know, the localized versions.
We got Happy Kirby. We're getting Happy Kirby. It's great.
Happy Kirby's no longer pissed.
Yeah. Whatever's bothering Kirby, it's over. It's probably because that tree is finally dead.
Wispy Woods has finally had it. Someone cut it down and turned into firewood. No. You actually don't want Mad Kirby, because if you have an angry Kirby, you are literally one step away from universal annihilation. I don't think you pissed off Kirby for long.
If there's one Nintendo character you want on your side, it's probably Kirby. He's scarier than, like, Ridley.
Yeah, absolutely.
Hey folks, Jeremy here. As the only clean-shaven video game podcasters in America, Bob and I were thrilled to finally find a sponsor that truly gets us. Harry's. If you've ever spent any time in the shave aisle, you've probably noticed Harry's products. And if you've used them, you know that they're as effective as they are stylish. And they're surprisingly affordable compared to shaving gear from the major brands. Right now, Harry's has a special offer available to Retronauts listeners. You can get a starter set, normally a $13 value, for only $3. That includes a 5-blade German-engineered razor and weighted handle, foaming shave gel, and a travel cover, all for $3. No strings attached. Simply go to harrys.com/retro and sign up for their trial, which includes a no-risk subscription to Harry's that you can cancel at any time with zero fuss. Refills on products start as low as $2, half of what you pay for other blades. Harry's is confident in their products, and for good reason. They simply sell great products that offer a smooth shave and last longer than other blades. And their other products are every bit as good as their razors, with creams, lotions, and washes that keep your freshly shorn looks hydrated and healthy, something you'll want as we head into cold, dry winter weather. Harry's trial is a no-brainer if you're one of the cool, clean-shaven guys like us. And even if you're not, now is your chance to cast down the tyranny of facial hair and let your underlying good look shine through, you handsome devil you. Get your best shave ever this fall with Harry's razors and skincare products. Get a $13 starter set for just $3 at harrys.com/retro. That's harrys.com/retro for a $3 starter set.
So if I can dial things back for a second. I understand Color Splash. I understand Origami King. What about Sticker Star stuck out so much that, like, yeah, I was just about to say, like, you know, ironically, that one did not stick with me at all.
Yeah, like the stickers.
Hey.
That's the joke.
I don't even remember much of a script for that game.
I think what it is it appeals to my, let's say, bad taste. In a sense, it's not. I don't actually think it's bad taste. I'm just using that as relative shorthand because when I went back to Sticker Star earlier this week to sort of refresh my memory, the opening sequence is almost—it's almost like they're on purpose trying to piss you off. It's like you don't. You need to gather all these toads. I think it's like 20 something toads. So some of them are in bunches, so it's not as bad as it sounds. But
yeah.
You have to peel them all off, whatever they're stuck to, and then they head over to the next area to unroll the town, literally unroll it. It's all been rolled up, and you need all of them. And they never tell you, like, this is how many there are left. It's just, oh, you haven't got anything yet. So you're constantly looking around, and what it sort of teaches you, because you've only got these two very small spaces to work with, it teaches you organically that you're going to have to really fucking comb these places. You've got to do everything. You can't miss a thing. You've got to, like, overturn every pebble to try and find these toads. You've got to go between a space in the houses that it looks like you can't go to find the last one. You've got to think a lot of lateral thinking, a lot of how can I interact with this world that it feels like I've absolutely rinsed. I don't know what else to do, and it's still not letting me progress. And I understand that 90% of people are going to just be like, nah, screw this. I don't want to play this anymore. 10% of people like me who grew up playing like King's Quest are just like, hell yeah, I'm going to find those toads. The thing that really sold me on it, though, is later, not that much later, you end up in a sort of pyramid. And along the line, lining all the walls are coffins. And you can walk up to the coffins and you can open them. Sometimes there'll be enemies inside. Sometimes there'll be stuff inside. Mm-hmm. And they teach you that way that that's how you interact with the coffins. You pull them open. That's it. And eventually I get to a point where, and I just warn you, this isn't going to sound that exciting to anyone but me. You get to a point where there's a spike pit that you can't get past. And I'm sitting there like, how the hell do you get past this? It's just, there's nothing I can think of that would get me past this. I haven't got anything that makes me jump higher. There's no moving platform or anything. There's got to be a solution. Maybe it's somewhere else. Maybe it's through here. I don't know. So I'm walking around this, like, maybe five rooms, trying desperately, like, look, almost walking. Like, you know when you're bombing every wall in Metroid?
Yeah.
It's a bit like that. And eventually, for some reason, it occurs to me, in that room, there's a coffin that's tipped over on the ground. And the solution is so simple. You jump on the coffin that's tipped over, jump onto the background coffins and walk along them. And because the game has spent so much time teaching you that the only way you interact with them is by opening them, it just never sparked in my head that you could use them as a platform.
Right.
And it's this puzzle design that is almost like brain chemistry. It's like fucking with your brain.
Uh-huh.
I know it sounds insane, but
you actually enlightened me here because yes, you grew up with those kind of merciless.
And at the moment of it, it was such a kind of, oh my god, it's been staring me in the face this whole time.
Yeah,
that I actually felt like borderline emotional at how happy that made me.
I totally understand that point of view.
I love stuff like that, and that game is completely full of it. And again, I'm going to stress for the third time, I totally get people who hate that game. Like, it's like, fair enough.
Yeah.
But for me, that one was for me.
That's interesting. Yeah.
It's like a little 3DS puzzle box. Like, every room is just, you got to do everything in every room. And I just, it makes me so tingly.
I like the way the game played. I just didn't really care for the lack of story after Thousand Year Door had such a great script. But I totally understand that. Like, as you said, puzzle box design, ancient, rare sort of stuff, I suppose.
The script I think is still funny, but it is different because the story is quite trivial. It's not really a story game at all. And Color Splash and Origami King take that philosophy, but they kind of broaden it. Like, Color Splash is incredibly like Sticker Star.
Mm-hmm.
It's I don't like it as much as Sticker Star because I think the combat is slightly more annoying.
Yeah,
because it feels completely in that game, it does feel irrelevant. In Sticker Star, the combat gets a lot of like stick, ha ha ha, because of the lack of XP makes it feel pointless. But to me, it's just part of the puzzle because you've got to save those stickers you've got because you might need them for something else. Yeah. So you need to load up. It's almost like deck management in a sense. Like what
it very much is.
And I really liked that. But Color Splash was just like, pick up the gamepad and swipe those cards now. And I'm like, please, why can't I just do this with the buttons? You can't do this with the buttons. Swipe those cards.
That's the like,
come on, please, come on. Origami King, I didn't like the combat at all, and that almost ruined the game for me, but we'll probably get to that as well.
Yeah.
So two thoughts on some things you were saying there. Mm. One is when you're talking about the game show like aspect in Thousand Year Door, that kind of reminds me how like it almost felt like each chapter almost had like a different kind of genre to it, which was a neat thing. And in a way, like with Sticker Star, it almost feels like they kind of like, you know, swapped, like hopped to a different genre altogether for that installment.
Yep. They absolutely did. It is not an RPG. It's an adventure game with some turn-based combat that's like vestigial.
Yeah,
it's definitely like deck building.
Yeah, and that's you know, that's a choice. It's a choice that I valued, and as a result, it puts me in a position where I have a series of RPGs where I genuinely like all of them a lot.
Yeah.
All I say is a series of RPGs, a series of games.
Everybody wins. Yeah.
No, nobody has mentioned Super Paper Mario to anybody.
I was not a fan of Super Paper Mario, and that actually highlights. I don't remember if Thousand Year Door had this problem. That was, you are not allowed to skip cutscenes in Super Paper Mario.
You can't skip cutscenes in Thousand Year Door either. Yeah. I'm hoping that the remake will
fix that because the reason why I don't like Super Paper Mario is because you had that really long ass intro, and it's like, okay, I love the writing of these games, but let's get on with it. And then you're asked by the great spirit or whoever, like, can you go save this world? Or we're in trouble, and you can answer no. And I said, like, okay, I'm going to say no to see what happens. And you just get a game over screen. And then I'm like, okay, great. And I start again, and the cinema is going again. I said, nah, I'm done. I'm pretty good.
I liked Super Paper Mario, just not as much as the Thousand Year Door.
You're right.
I mean, I liked it, and it's... I'm sometimes a little surprised that it's Sticker Star that gets it in the neck, because Super Paper Mario, to me, is, like, clearly less like Paper Mario. It's not clearly less of an RPG than...
Than
Sticker Star is. And it's got less interesting stage design. I think they don't really do enough with the 3D thing. But I still like it. I still like it fine. I like how experimental and bizarre it is. And it's full of, like, characters that are just, like, weird geometric shapes.
It really is.
I kind of dig it. It's probably my least favorite, but I kind of dig it still.
Yeah, out of the original trilogy, it's probably, like, my least favorite, but I still like it.
Yeah. I don't think there's a game lower than, like, an 8 out of 10 in this whole series for me, honestly. It's a great series. Although, I have to confess, I haven't played Paper Mario, the first one, at all, hardly.
Me neither.
God knows why.
I have.
I think it's on Switch. I have no excuse. I just play it on Switch, like, today.
I bought it once it hit Virtual Console, because I missed it originally, but after Thousand Year Door, I couldn't stay away.
Yeah, I didn't want to play because I already played Thousand Year Door, and I figured, well, I don't really have a reason to go back to the original, but I will someday.
Like I said, I was really trying to drink in the whole Mario world and universe and characters and just everything I could get my hands on. So that was part of it. The other thing about Sticker Star is it kind of marked a bit of a shift for the series, where it really became more of a, like, before, the whole paper thing seemed to be more of an aesthetic choice. It didn't seem to really drive the world or story or anything. And Sticker Star kind of, I feel like we're talking more about Sticker Star than Thousand Year Door now.
Can't talk about one without the other.
As it was decreed by the prophet.
I was prepared for this. Don't worry.
But yeah, like, kind of changed to where, like, yeah, like, everything is focused on everything being paper. And to that point, actually, to kind of, you know, turn it back around, the first three games felt like they were still part of the same Mario universe as everything else. Mm-hmm. Like, even King Goomba from the first game, like, shows up in Mario 64 DS, as I recall.
In one of the bonus areas, yeah.
Yeah, you'd get, like, some crossover like that. And then they turned around, and I think Sticker Star might have been where they began, like, making it, like, a separate universe kind of thing.
It's, like, been, they,
They basically classic Sonic'd it, and
I think there's an interview, one of the Iwata Asks interviews, where they specifically say they had like a decree that they couldn't use, like they had to use the existing Mario characters, which has been held up as a huge. I mean, I'm not going to pretend like Sticker Star, as much as I love it, it would have been better if it wasn't just all Toads. I'm not going to deny that.
Yeah,
but I think to me that's not enough to write the game off. Not that you're saying it is, but a lot of people seem to behave that way.
Yeah, no, people really are sticking on those Toads.
Nice.
I don't think it's so much the Toad thing, but like they had a variety of Toads in the previous games. Mm-hmm. And of course, like doing this, it's basically denying us our Koops, denying us our Goombellas and that kind of thing. And it's like, why would you do that? Especially if it's supposed to be now a different, like, you know, universe from the regular Mario. Why wouldn't you be able to do something different there instead of making it more the same?
I agree that they should have pushed the boat out more. I completely agree with that. I think I don't know if I see it as a Paper Mario problem, as a Mario in general problem, because that was an era when, you know, New Super Mario Brothers, Mario 3D World,
right.
great games, very conservative in terms of what they're presenting you in their worlds. And, you know, 10 out of 10. But again, it would have been better if they had pushed the visual boat out. And maybe now that we've got like Mario Odyssey, where there's tons of new weird shit.
And Mario Wonder is just like, okay, you know what? Everyone take acid and play this game.
Get the streamers down here.
Super Mario Brothers Wonder looks like Miyamoto or somebody at Nintendo lost a bet, because they're like, they're doing all this like crazy stuff that we've been wanting for a while now. And like, I mean, playable Daisy alone, to say nothing of playable Peach. And it's like, somebody lost a bet somewhere.
I mean, there's been a lot of complaining about the state of Mario, and particularly like the new Super Mario Brothers games and how sort of samey they are visually.
Yeah, yeah.
And as someone who honestly loves all of the new Super Mario Brothers games, and now we're getting Super Mario Wonder, I'm just like, let's fucking go. Like, yes, man. Another 2D platform, another 2D Mario made by the Mario team. This is going to be another 10 out of 10 banger. And I love them. I love all those games. It's great loving these things. You know, it feels amazing not to not like these games because they look a bit boring. It makes me so happy.
I'm going to go ahead and say that I loved the new Super Mario Brothers games too. Like, my least favorite one was New Super Mario Brothers 2. And that was more because, like, it felt like they were going through the motions and they didn't, like, realize potential. Like, it was on 3DS, but you didn't get any of the Yoshi's Island type 3D kind of, you know, stuff going on with the backgrounds or anything. And, I mean, you had a prime opportunity for Wario or do something, like, you know, story-wise with the coin. And no, it's just another literal rehash, so...
Well, I have to say, I think that one of the reasons I loved Origami King so much is because, yes, it had that very plain aesthetic and everyone complained, oh my God, it's just paper, paper, paper. But it was so hilarious. I think they knew they were limited and they worked with what they had and it was fantastic. Like someone, there was a big criticism about how, oh my God, there's a stapler that's a boss. How this is the lowest of the low. And that stapler is the funniest fucking boss fight I had in ages.
I don't want to be one of those guys who just sits there and complains about things other people have said, you know?
Yeah, but no,
I just don't get that. That criticism doesn't even register for me. It's like, well, what would you prefer? Like, what, another big tortoise? Like a big...
Yeah.
A big Goomba. Like, I like Goombas. I get it. But like to say that it's the lowest of the low is just a weird, baseless, like it's just clearly coming from you. It's clearly a you problem, you know?
Well,
but again, I get it. I do. I kind of get it. But I'm just too caught up in how good they are to dislike it.
This goes back to that divide I was talking about where like before Sticker Star, like, you know, the world, it wasn't like it was an aesthetic choice, but it wasn't like about things being made of paper. And so like you got things like Bone Claw, the Dragon, X-Knots and the Shadow Sirens and Rock Hawk and all this great stuff. And then, you know, afterwards and things are made of paper. Now you're getting staplers and there's a firm divide there, and I can see why people would love stuff that, you know, seems to fit into a Mario world more than because, oh, hey, we're playing with paper, so yeah, let's use paper tools.
I totally get it. I totally
understand. I 100% get it, yeah.
At the same time, when they kill the stapler, it has, like, this really thick New York accent, and, like, it dies. The last thing it says, like, it dies when it dies, it kind of, like, goes completely horizontal the way it does when you open a stapler, and he just says, hey, forget about it, and he blows up.
That's so good. Yeah. I suppose what I find slightly objectionable is the idea that Paper Mario should be or is a Mario RPG series because it contains two RPGs. It's like, yeah, I've got some bad news, folks. That's an adventure game series now, and it has been for much longer than it was ever an RPG series. You got two RPGs, and then we got a bunch of stuff that was just like defiantly not RPGs.
Yeah.
You know, there was already Mario and Luigi, or maybe the nadir of the whole kind. Is nadir? Is that how you pronounce it? The nadir.
We're going to say yes.
Mm. Of the whole like aesthetic homogenization thing was when you got Mario and Luigi Paper Jam, where yeah, you've got these two worlds that are meant to be these unbelievably like what's the word, whimsical, silly. Mm-hmm. And it's just, like, boring as shit. I don't even hate that game. I really don't hate it. It's perfectly playable. It's just that it really does take these two worlds and does nothing with them. It's a shame. It is a shame. But something I thought was quite interesting, thinking about the whole worlds thing and how they're separate worlds, is that they were, to my surprise, in Paper Mario The Thousand Year Door, the subject of this very podcast, which we're just now...
Oh, my God, that's right.
There's a reference to Mario and Luigi in it.
When
they have Chocola Cola.
Yep.
And I was like, holy shit, I didn't know that they referenced each other. That's cool.
Yeah, and I think Mario and Luigi Superstar Saga, I think they had like a university or something in the Bean Bean Kingdom where they show all these blocks from different games. And I think a Paper Mario block was there, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think you're right.
So it was all like one big Mario world, and then they start kind of chopping it up.
Yeah.
And speaking of which, it's like, okay, yeah, I didn't mind them trying to expand on like what Paper Mario could be so much, like, you know, in terms of genre, like back when we had Mario and Luigi for the RPG thing. And this is coming from me, a guy who's not normally an RPG player, but, you know, yeah, Mario's been the exception for me for a long time.
I don't play RPGs hardly, but I will play every Mario RPG. They're not the same thing to me.
Yeah. But, yeah, and it's like, okay, when we had Mario and Luigi, at least that was able to shoulder the load. And then when Nintendo kind of let Alpha Dream just, you know, become dust in the wind, well, now where are we? We're stuck with,
man,
you know.
I'm so mad about those remakes being stuck on 3DS. They were so good.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't play those remakes, but I tell you, I did play Mario and Luigi Dream Team, and I'm really sorry, but that was one of the shittest games I ever played.
You didn't like it? I didn't like Dream Team. Was okay, but Bowser's Inside Story is fantastic.
I love Bowser's Inside Story. I love Superstar Saga, so Superstar Saga is a fantastic, like one of my favorite games ever, probably. Yeah. But Dream Team is like, oh my god, it's like 70 hours long, and it never ever stops talking down to you the whole time. You're just like, okay, I'm going to explain this thing to you, and you say no, and he's like, actually, it's very important, so I'm going to explain it to you anyway. And it's like, I know how, like, the game never, ever lets you off the leash, and it's, and I was just like, gritting my teeth, like, I'm finishing this, I'm 50 hours in.
I don't even remember Dream Team that well.
I didn't even notice that, but like I said, I mean, I probably said, like, you know, yes, tell me about, like, everything, because I was drinking everything up, so.
Yeah. I think it's, like, the opposite of, like, Star Trek sequels, where only the odd-numbered ones are good. Because I really didn't like Partners in Time that much either, and then Bowser's Inside Story was awesome. Well, with Mario games, to be perfectly clear, when I say I didn't like them, what I mean is they weren't as good as the other ones, maybe.
Okay, that's fair.
Because Mario is, like, base level, what, 6 out of 10, which is above average.
Yeah, it's pretty rare for a Mario game to dip below 7.
Yeah. So, like, Dream Team, I would probably, not that we care about numbers, but if I had to, I would say that's, like, the 6. That's one of the weakest Mario games I've played. But it was still, I still finished the fucking game, so.
What does that tell you? I don't know. I kind of felt like, for a bit there, the Mario and Luigi games were getting better as they went along, because I didn't like Superstar Saga as much, mostly because I found, like, I don't know, some of the timing in the gameplay didn't work as well.
I found the remake really took care of that.
Okay, yeah, I need to try that sometime.
Yeah, I want to play that, yeah.
The other thing actually reminds me of what you mentioned earlier when you reached the end of Thousand Year Door. Something similar happened to me when I reached the end of Superstar Saga, where I get to the final boss and there's a part where you're like kind of on the ground, knocked out. Didn't even get a chance to like, you know, recover or do anything before the boss just like attacks me and game over. It was like one of those like scripted events, and then like I didn't get a chance to recover from it. And
if I recall correctly, the final boss, like Calculator or Calculator Soul or whatever, it has two phases, and it, before the second phase, it puts you at 1 HP and attacks you.
Yes,
and you have to dodge the attack, or you just are done. And it's like
I couldn't dodge it. My guys were like face down on the ground. So
it's completely unfair in a way that I both love and hate at the same time.
So you're a masochist. I totally understand you now, Stuart.
I think it's okay sometimes for a game to just stick its middle finger in your face, like occasionally,
just once,
because it makes it more memorable. It makes it more memorable.
If I did not love Mario so much at the time, I would have just probably been done with it right then and there.
You must have been thrilled about the sheer fan service of the fact that you fight every single one of the Koopa kids on the way up to that.
Yeah,
I thought that was great.
Appearing for the first time
Mario
3 or World.
Mario World, yeah.
First time since Yoshi Safari, technically, but.
Right, okay.
Oh, yeah, right. See, who the hell would know he played that shit, huh? I didn't really get to talk too much about why I like Thousand Year Door, and I think one of the reasons why I love it so much is probably the setting. Like, we talk about how much we love Mario Worlds already. Like, you know, I think the series has incredible imagination. It is probably the first Mario game is what like, really sparked my imagination when it came to games, and you know, really taught me how the two can be intertwined. But with Thousand Year Door, you have like the Glitz Pit. You have, you know, Rogueport. We talked about how memorable Rogueport is. Can we talk about how you get into Rogueport? And yes, we mentioned the Chalk outline, but also, like, characters are talking to you like, oh, welcome to Rogueport, blah, blah, blah. And while this is going on, someone's getting whacked in the background by the Pianta Mafia.
That's great, yeah.
And that was the funniest thing to me because I hate the Piantas. I think they're, like, the most useless characters ever.
They're so awful.
And I didn't like Mario Sunshine, so I was just like, oh, my God, now they finally have a point, and they finally have a story, which was, like, this whole Romeo and Juliet West Side Story thing, which was just brilliant. It's stuff like that. Like, also the Twilight Town, how really that was done so well. The town full of Canadian penguins. So, of course, I'm going to just,
I thought they were Russian.
They're kind of both. There's like the Russian with the hat, the
classic Russian Canadian hat.
Yeah, and the other ones are just like, hey, we're penguins, eh? Hey, poutine.
I just liked. I mean, I think that like the stage on what is it, the XS Express?
I love that.
What a concept that is.
It's so cliche, but in a Mario context, it's just brilliant.
Yeah, that was kind of one of those like genre jumps I was talking about, because like now we're like in a, you know, mystery thing, sort of like Sonic the Hedgehog is Dead or Murder of Sonic the Hedgehog thing that was recent. But like, you know, it's integrated into the game, so it's still the same mechanics and everything. But yeah, that was a fun switch.
I mean, one for me, the most applauded level is, I think, the wrestling stage, the pro wrestling level, the Glitz Pit, where...
Yes!
When I was younger, when I played this the first time, I didn't like that because it was just fight after fight.
Right.
And like almost no... You go into the locker room, then you'd have a fight, and there was like almost nothing else going on. There was a little bit of sneaking around, but constant combat. And now... Now that I've this is a very oxymoronic statement, but now that I've grown up and actually am interested in pro wrestling a little bit, or at least understand,
to the vault.
At least I understand, you know, pro wrestling to some extent. I want to play that stage again because I reckon I'm going to love it now.
Yeah.
I'm going to be like fully in kayfabe, just like, yes, mate. There we go.
Yeah.
Can't wait.
I loved that stage so much that I would actually go back, defend my title, sometimes drop it on purpose, and basically go after it. Unfortunately, you couldn't really do much more than fight Rock Hawk over and over again. But I did that a lot. I was overpowered for probably the next couple of chapters because I was doing like title defenses and just eating the whole thing up.
That's really cool. That's really cool. I didn't remember that you could do that. That's awesome. I love that. If only they can incorporate some kind of like small scale Mario wrestling booking simulator, that would be fun.
Yeah.
That'd be fantastic.
There was talk about that for a while. Wasn't there like a Mario grappling game that became Mario Strikers?
I think the guys who made Mario Strikers were going to do a Mario volleyball game, was it? That included wrestling moves somehow?
Damn.
I forget.
Volleyball sucked. That would have made it a lot better.
Mario putting Luigi in like a cake cookie in a clutch.
I'm bringing you back. You're making you humble.
You're talking about the first Mario Brothers?
Go to sleep.
You're talking about the first Mario Brothers, and yeah, I remember reading the manual just like back to back constantly because, like, I don't know, just even that little bit of lore. I don't know if I'd have been like, you know, into video games the same way if like I didn't have that. People are like, oh, nobody plays Mario for the story. I'm like, I play Mario for the story
kind of because the story so well. Like, one thing I got to give a shout out to is the Luigi adventure that's going on the sidelines.
Genius. What a great idea.
But before we get into that, because that's like worth a whole tangent on its own, I just want to mention the Pianta thing. Yeah, I too hated the Piantas before, and that the beatdown just completely turned me around on them. I don't think I even noticed it happening at first, and then I look in the background, I'm like, wait, what's that? I replayed the intro all over again just so I could witness that. I started the game over.
The boss sends his regards.
The only thing missing is like one of the Piantas just like straightening his tie after the beatdown's done before they go off.
It's very funny.
Beautiful. I loved it. I was like, okay, now I get the Piantas. I'm on board.
I love the way that sort of sells the sort of the roguery of Rogueport, because then again, the next area you go into, you immediately get jacked, you get robbed. Like,
yeah. And
the fact you can chase down, you know, you get robbed by a bandit from Yoshi's Island, of all things.
Yeah.
Not even a shy guy, a variant specifically from Yoshi's Island, which is like really cool world building, I think. It's just a fantastic experience, like top to bottom, really. I mean, with the exception of maybe some of the last chapter's back and forth bullshit, which I think everyone can agree is a pain in the ass. I'm hoping that they will change it for the remake, but we'll
see.
Me
too.
And the other thing is, like, yeah, with those later games, again, you're not going to get those Pianta moments because you can't mess with the Piantas or any of the characters' designs. So, but yeah, anyway, Paper Luigi.
Oh, I'm actually Paper Luigi. As I understand, like, I'm trying to recall what happened exactly. I know that you talk to him, like, as you go through the game, and you see Luigi's like, "Hey, what's up, bro?" Yeah. And he's always being followed by some character that he teamed up with while you were doing your thing.
Am I right in saying that he's always in the bar at Rogueport with someone? Like, you have to keep going back to Rogueport.
Maybe you're right, and you check in with him. He might be right, and I only remember a Bloober being with him at one point, and it's just. Hey, this is my friend.
Not just a Bloober, a fried Bloober. He fell in the lava, and Luigi and the Bloober have different accounts of it. So he's basically like a crispy calamari at this point.
Well, isn't that the gag that Luigi tells you what happened, but then you talk to his partner, and they're like, "This is what really happened."
Yeah.
Yes, his partners do not like him.
Brilliant idea. What a genius. Whoever came up with that deserves, like, some yen, like lots of yen.
I forget why his partners don't like him. Like, is he just not competent?
Luigi was one who, I think, kicked the Bloober into the lava pit or something, or maybe used him to, like, you know, beat like a boss or something. And it's just this wonderful window into this parallel adventure to your own. Mm-hmm. And honestly, you know, if they were going to add anything for this new one, it should be to let you play through the Paper Luigi adventure, because that's a game that should have come out 20 years ago and didn't.
I would actually love to see a separate game, but I feel like just having him talk to you, it's perfect the way it is. It'd be me a little bit too much if we had to play through it as well.
I kind of wonder if they're going to do something a bit like they did with the Mario and Luigi remakes, where it was like Mario and Luigi and Bowser's Minions.
Which was a great little side thing. Yeah. Like, everyone bitches about Bowser Jr. for good reason, but that made him so cute and sympathetic. And the way Martin called him Small Bowser and was the only one faithful to him, it was really good.
I just wonder if they're going to do something like that. Are we going to get a direct between now and its release, which is like, happen. Oh, you're also getting this? That would be kind of cool.
Yeah, it's like, I mean, I'm perfectly fine with a faithful remake that just, you know, maybe tweaks, like, you know, the slight thing here or there, but is otherwise, like, you know, perfectly faithful to the original. But yeah, if they were going to add anything.
Speaking of tweaking and whatnot, I think one thing people are wondering about is the bits with Peach and Tech, because they were kind of, didn't she get undressed or something?
Doesn't she get, she gets nude at one point, invisibly nude.
Of course.
So she can sneak around. And it's the hottest thing I've ever seen. No, sorry, that's not.
it's the hottest thing you've never seen.
It's the hottest thing I've ever seen. Yeah, it's a sexy invisible lady. It is, and it was even then quite jarring, I think.
Yeah, it kind of was. Even seeing a toilet in Peach's room, like, wow, Peach poops.
Yeah. Jesus. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, it's really odd, and it feels a little bit kind of like, I don't know. It's not. I don't know how to describe it without getting into sort of unpleasant sort of territory. But it does feel like it's appeasing a specific person on the writing team, maybe, because that's their fetish. I don't know.
I was going to say bring up that meme, but this is like, you know, all audio, so we can't.
Is that
do
like
that.
In this episode, the writer's barely disguised fetish that one.
Yeah, that pretty much it. Because in a way, to me, it did. Even when I first played it, it did kind of give her the vibe of like, is this really necessary?
Yeah.
Like, could she not just be invisible, like, with her clothes? Is it really necessary?
That's pretty funny. But there's
Mario puts on a hat and turns invisible, all clothes and all. So,
the beginning of Mario and Luigi has a toad see Mario's penis and testicles. And, like, they're upset. They're just trying to pull something here, aren't they? And this was 1 year later, and they're like, well, we've had Mario now. We need to have Peach.
Wait, when did a toad see Mario's wee-wee? I don't remember
at the very beginning of the game, he's going to find Mario, and Mario is taking a shower.
Oh,
the toad runs into the room, runs out red-faced. And it's just like, he obviously saw Mario's cock. It's like, what else did he possibly have seen?
And Mario comes out of the shower, he's got a towel on, and then he, like, stomps the toad a few times.
Yeah, it's very, very funny. Very, very funny.
See, that broke my brain. Mario's penis and testicles broke my brain. Let it be known to the world.
Mario is very protective of his spaghetti and meatballs.
Oh, my goodness gracious. Yeah, there's also the Bowser bits, so to speak.
Incredible. One of the first times that Nintendo had actually gone, like, we're going to parody our past. Like, this is a parody of Super Mario Brothers, like, 1-1.
That's right. Yeah, he kind of stops through 1-1, and it's like he's... Yeah. So overpowered. I love it when an RPG lets you do something stupid and overpowered, like in Final Fantasy VII when you're with Sephiroth in the beginning and for the Cloud flashback, and he just has this 20-foot massive Mune, like, slicing through everything at once while, you know, quote-unquote Cloud is, like, the new soldier, and he's just, like, kind of hitting things with, like, you know, for, like, 20 hit points, and Sephiroth comes by and skewers, like, six enemies and, like, a shish kebab.
I always enjoy that. I think that I kind of feel like these sections may have inspired the Mega Mushroom in New Super Mario Brothers, because they give off a similar vibe to me, I have to say.
Yeah, that's because, like, you get enough of the instead of mushrooms, Bowser powers up on meat, doesn't he?
Yeah,
kind of like
Bonk. I think so. Yeah, and also,
get enough of them, and then he turns into a giant Bowser, sort of like Mega Mario. So yeah, I think it did precede that.
If this didn't originate, like, the Bowser. Well, I suppose it was in 2003, it was in Mario and Luigi, but this was a continuation of this newfound sort of characterization of Bowser as this kind of ineffectual, like, anger management, like, blundering, like, the most unbelievably appealing take on Bowser.
Feel like
so much fun.
Started with the first Mario RPG. I think that was, like...
Yeah, of course. I forgot about that. Yes, yeah.
Yeah.
I think Paper Mario does it a lot better, because I do have a little bit of a problem with the original Mario RPG, the way Bowser's a little bit of a wuss. Like, and it's just in that very square way where it's like, oh my God, Bowser is so stupid and ineffectual next to this giant sword and this man who hammers things. Like, these are the real villains. Bowser's just like, but then of course you get Bowser in battle and he's a complete badass, as he is a complete badass. I love
that. And of course, Bowser's inside story really is the one that brings that to its absolute peak.
That's hilarious. That's unbelievably brilliant. I will boldly go out there and say that the Mario RPG games, like, and the, you know, the ones surrounding it, those are some of the best written games, period. Like, yeah, they're always funny. They're always smart. The editing, the localization is just razor sharp. You can't find an error no matter how, like, deeply you scour it. I'd love to be part of that localization team. I'll say that much.
Okay, so I think I mentioned this on Axe the Blood God recently when you had me on there. Might be worth bringing up here again, considering the topic. So I'm not a huge RPG person, but I definitely made a point to check out Mega Man X Command Mission. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh yeah, this is pretty cool and stuff. And I think my only real RPG experience before this was years before with Super Mario RPG.
Right.
And then it was like, I think right after Command Mission, I played Thousand Year Door. And then I'm just like, oh, wow.
This is what an RPG is. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Just like, not to slight Command Mission, because like I still enjoy it for what it is, but it was like just the kind of like the humor and the characterization and everything. It just felt like such a step beyond.
I
mean,
I think that everything is going to seem better off the Command Mission personally, but that's, you know, that's me being cynical.
That is our. We do have an episode over on Axe of the Blood God.
Yeah.
Nudge, wink, wink.
Yeah, this is. No, forget that. No. I will listen to that. That sounds interesting. Yeah. But I wasn't told in advance that you'd remind me of that, and I feel like I've been attacked.
Oh, I'm sorry. No, I'm sorry. Okay, I'm good. You got the shivers. Okay.
I wanted to mention real quick, because you said about how good the script is in Thousand Year Door, and it is. I do feel like that applies to the subsequent games as well, because they go even harder into the dry humor.
Yes.
Like, I remember very strongly in Color Splash, there's a bit where you can visit like a hot springs with Toads in it, and you get in the hot springs and you talk to the Toads, and it's like, I feel like we know each other pretty well, Mario, but not watch each other take baths well, you know? And there's just so much humor like that throughout the game.
I think I remember that. Which one was that?
I think it's Color Splash, but it might be Origami. That's one of the problems with the fact that they do have this aesthetic. They do kind of merge together for me.
Yeah.
Origami King for me is, it's notable for its combat, which I didn't really like. Whereas Color Splash, I also didn't like the combat, but I didn't like it in a slightly less aggressive way. But they may merge together for me. It's because they're both HD, like, Paper Mario games. I can't remember which one is which.
The Paper Mario games, yeah, it also is almost a detriment in a way that how good they look. Like, they do kind of blend together in your head a little bit, but not in a terrible way, but it does make it hard to distinguish between them sometimes.
I mean, the remake of Thousand Year Door is going to look astonishing. It's going to look absolutely beautiful.
It's already like the widescreen helps it so much. Like the way the audience looks now is just incredible.
The Mario RPG remake looks incredible as well, I think.
I love
the Switch is going out with some real good games.
I think that to kind of go back on a point briefly, I think that Nintendo has kind of broken some kind of curse where they were just like, okay, Mario has to be uniform. Mario has to be this way. And I think they were doing that at the time, because when the Wii was on the rocks, they were focusing very hard on making Mario a brand outside of video games. And with the movie, of course, they succeeded like 50-fold. And now that they're more confident with the Wii, with the Switch and all that, they're probably cutting loose a bit more. Plus the old guard, they're all there as mentors and stuff like that. Yeah. But I mean, I'd imagine like Miyamoto is like semi-retired and just kind of like wants to spend time with his family and stuff like that. And he said many, many times, I am not here to direct everyone. I am here to be a mentor. I am here to let them have their own ideas. And I know that he's sometimes held up as a boogeyman because of for story reasons. But yeah, I firmly believe that Nintendo is just like, you know what, guys, maybe we will see a more loose and fun Paper Mario RPG in the future, just kind of predicting things over here.
I hope so. I mean,
I'm hoping that this will be a testing bed.
Yeah.
I would love that. Even as a fan of the adventure ones, I've had three of those now. I'm full. Like, you know, you can give me more and I'll pat my belly and I'll delightedly consume it. But if they want to do an RPG now, I officially am fine with it. Hey, Nintendo, if you're listening, it's okay. You can go ahead and do it now. I have made it very open for you to do so.
I liked really how Origami King touched on the open world concept for Paper Mario. And I would love to see that expanded upon. Combat was not the greatest, as you mentioned. Like, it wasn't my favorite either. It wasn't terrible, though. I kind of liked the puzzles, but by the end, I was spending the money. Solve this for me. Get out of here.
The problem is, like, I am quite stupid. And every time I'd see one of those puzzles, my brain would just be like, no, you're only good at finding totes. You're not good at lining up rings. I think if I spent a bit more time with it, I might eventually be able to master it. But for the time being, I was just kind of like, nah.
No, I understand that.
As much as I did enjoy it, I struggled like pretty much the whole way through. I mean, it does give you the opportunity to make it easier for you by using the totes.
That's what I did. By the end, yeah. I was just like, you weren't really using the coins for anything again. It became a problem, but I was using it just to get the totes to solve my shit, right?
You mentioned very briefly the audience in the Thousand Year Door, and we haven't really talked about that at all. And it's one of the most unique things in the game.
It is.
Before we go into that, I just want to mention, I feel like... ever since they kind of started straying from the more RPG stuff after Super Paper Mario, because, yeah, I'm going to include that because it had the experience points and stuff, as I recall. I don't know. It's just felt like they haven't really been able to nail down the combat in a way that seems to really satisfy everyone.
I mean, I liked hitting Sticker Star because it did serve a purpose. That's interesting because Sticker Star is such an inversion of what the series already did. Sorry, stop if I'm rambling. But... what it does is, in Paper Mario, the combat boosts you and it makes you stronger. And in Sticker Star, it makes you weaker. You need the coins to buy more stickers.
Yeah.
But you also don't want to use your stickers. It is a genuinely interesting resource management balancing act because of the way it's structured. And I dug the shit out of it. I was just like, this is great. I loved it. But at the same time, yes, if it doesn't land, it doesn't land. It's one of those things where you just want to say to people, you just want to reach into the internet, you just want to take their arms around them and just say, listen, I understand your point, but you keep saying it over and over again, and it's very boring.
Yeah.
And I want the internet to just chill out and just let both things be what they are. That's what I want. I want friends. I want everyone to be friends.
Everyone to be friends over Paper Mario games.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I want to go on Twitter and I want to say, I think Sticker Star is the best Paper Mario game, and I want someone to reply and say, I disagree, but I respect your position.
Instead of kicking you in the head.
Instead of just calling me slurs.
Now, honestly, I think it would probably go over a lot better, especially now that we don't have Mario and Luigi. Maybe they could alternate between an RPG and then, like, you know, something experimental, RPG, something experimental, kind of back and forth, satisfy both crowds. Maybe?
All I want is for it not to end, or at least I want Mario RPGs to continue in some form. I think that Alpha Dream being closed sucks.
It does.
It really sucks. I mean... in a sense, it was a little bit like, because people were kind of rolling their eyes at just like, oh, another Mario and Luigi and another remake.
Yeah.
And it was of a game that was just the previous generation, Bowser's Inside Story, what, you know.
That should have been on the Switch. It probably would have done so much better, and it would have laid the groundwork for them to be able to do further Switch games. Maybe they didn't have the money to do it for whatever reason. Maybe Nintendo wasn't going to bankroll that.
If we ever get, you know, a DS Switch Online thing, which we're probably not getting because it would be kind of difficult.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we've got Superstar Saga, I think, on the GBA app, but
is
that's it.
I
think it is, yeah. But that's it. And those late 3DS re-releases are going to become, like, gold dust, I think, if they're not already. I mean, I'm kind of an idiot, and I've bought some of those games, the ones that I'm not necessarily interested in, because I'm sitting on them, because I expect they're going to go very... bad person, basically.
You're just securing your retirement, that's all.
I am just... it's my pension, yeah. You know, it's like they re-released, you know, Luigi's Mansion, the original. And now we're at the end of the Switch life, so to speak. They've re-released Luigi's Mansion 2 on it.
Yeah.
which I'm really excited about because I love that game. But it's a very odd choice. Same with Mario vs. Donkey Kong. What an unusual game to do a remake of.
Right, yeah.
Oh, you know,
I like that game. I'm not dissing that game. It's just like of all of the games, they chose this kind of mid 7 out of 10 game that nobody even really particularly loved in the first place. It's fine.
Well, when I first saw that, I'm like, why aren't they remaking Donkey Kong 94 instead?
Yeah, agreed.
And then, I found out, oh, it's Nintendo Software Technologies, is it called?
The
ones who made Mario versus Donkey Kong to begin with. So it's like, oh, okay, that makes sense. All right.
They're going back to the well.
Yeah.
You know, my favorite thing about that game is at the end, when you watch the credits, Mario says, thank you very much for playing my gameses.
He does that in Mario Season 4, which I love. Thank you so much for playing my game.
It's so good.
I hope that this maybe does well enough that instead of more like lemming mini Mario stuff, we get like more puzzle platformer type stuff. More DK94 type stuff.
That'd be great. I mean, I didn't hate the mini Mario games, but that was a genre choice. I mean,
yeah.
Why would you want Mario versus Donkey Kong? This is my fault. I'm so sorry. I always do this. It's because it's another Mario remake, and we're getting like this, you know, this clutch of remakes that we've had and are having. We've got 3 Mario remakes coming just like this and next year.
Right.
I think they're doing more Mario remakes than new Marios now.
Yeah. Mario Wonder, at least. Mario Wonder is there, and then, you know, when they do Switch 2 or whatever, we'll probably get another 3D Mario. So
that's what I'm thinking. But that's okay. I like Mario. I love Mario. I love Thousand Year Door. I'm looking forward to all of it.
I am delighted that Nintendo constantly make Mario games. Like,
I am very delighted. We live in a difficult future, but Mario is something that's there for us.
It makes me happy.
It does.
On the Alpha Dream subject, I don't know if this would have saved them or not, but maybe instead of, like, you know, the Mario and Luigi series kind of going on a downward slide and then into remakes, I am forever going to regret that they never made a Wario and Waluigi RPG.
Wow. They should.
Maybe that would have, like, revived things.
The funny meme character is Waluigi.
Are you not a Waluigi fan?
I don't want to be rude.
But no.
I think that Wario, I love Wario. I think Waluigi is just like, he's just a meme.
Exactly. That's why I love him. He's absolutely just a meme.
I liked Waluigi before he was a meme or anything like that. Well, once yes, I saw Mario Strikers doing like a DX chop, like, you know.
That is really funny, actually. Yeah.
I was like, okay, I'm now officially on board with this character. Not to mention his weird like Banjo Country theme that was just like so out of left field. It was just like, okay, yes, I am a Waluigi fan now.
I do like the fact that, like, Waluigi is just this fucking goblin. Like, Wario is, like, established as being, like, I can't remember if he was a friend or if he was the third brother of them, and he was teased by Mario and Luigi, and that's why he became evil, I guess.
Yeah, he was a friend.
And then you get Waluigi, and he just turns up. There's, like, no explanation for his existence. It's like, Luigi also has this evil, like, counterpart who isn't really that evil. He's just this bizarre goblin-like freakish creature who goes, wah! Or whatever.
Can you imagine being a fly on the wall for that design process? Like, make him, like, gangly. No, ganglier.
Was he first in Mario Tennis on the 64?
Yeah, he was. I think he invented.
Oh, man, I'm proud of myself for remembering that.
Yeah, they had to have doubles, so they invented Waluigi.
Well, Wario was like an exaggerated Mario. He was like, you know, fatter and all this kind of stuff. And Luigi, you know, they kind of went the same way. Yeah. They made him like, you know, taller and skinnier.
In Japanese, Waru means like bad, like evil, right? So it's Waluigi. Like,
Waluigi.
Yeah, clever.
Kind of like how in Mario, the first Mario RPG, I think Boshi, or whatever his name is, was Woshi or Woo Washi. Or something. Washi.
Which is like too bad they didn't. I know some people would hate that, but I would love if they actually brought back the Japanese name so that he could effectively fit in with Wario and Waluigi and Washi.
He should hang out with them. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly.
I sort of agree. I mean, I think because one of the things I didn't like about him, and this is very petty, is a grammar thing, which is Wario makes sense, but Waluigi is just putting the word what in front of Luigi.
I know, it's great.
And it's,
I
mean, wrong.
It's the same pun, it just doesn't translate as well,
yeah, exactly,
as Wario.
Precisely,
because
yeah, yeah.
You don't even have to know about the whole Waroey thing.
Why didn't they call him something that's like Evil Luigi or something, or like Luigi or something
Luigi.
Like that?
Luigi. I like Luigi. Wait, that's a Pokemon.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I do love that Waluigi's ambition is to outdo Luigi of all characters.
Yeah, talk about that. That
makes him even funnier.
If you called him Luigi, the internet would have a field day with that, I think. Imagine the fan art.
Oh, my God. Imagine the fan art, indeed. Yeah, I would say that maybe in the next Paper Mario RPG or whatever we get for a Mario RPG, we should have Waluigi and Wario in there. Just for the hell of it, hell, just like maybe they'll run a town, maybe they'll run a bed and breakfast that goes to hell. I could come up
like, yeah, it's like bottom, it's like Guest House Paradiso.
Why? Sometimes I think you want to fail. Shut up.
That'd be great. They are
Simpsons reference.
Thank you.
I'm probably the only one who's seen this stuff, but they are a hoot in the Mario and Sonic Olympic games, the handheld versions, yes, where they've got the story modes. Yeah. And honestly, the idea of a Wario and Waluigi RPG from Alpha Dream, like, I saw them basically using the sprites for that. I don't know if you've heard of Super Mario Brothers Z, this fan animation by a guy called Alvin Earthworm.
I think I've heard of it, but I don't think I've ever watched it.
The Wario and Waluigi segments are hilarious. Like, you know how Mario used Luigi as a tool in the games to do stuff? Yeah, at one point in the animation, you've got Wario, like, where they're out at sea, and he's using Waluigi wrapped around him as an inner tube to swim.
That's quite good.
And it's like, oh my God, like, what other kind of stuff are we not getting that, you know?
There's a fan game called Psycho Waluigi that's really impressive as well.
Which I've heard of that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that was a good one.
Can I use this outlet to complain about Mario and Sonic at the Olympic Games? Because I'm never going to get a chance to.
You're not going
to
find it anywhere else.
Well, the last one that was on the Switch, I can't remember if it was like Tokyo 2020 or something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, you know what you can't do in that is you can't make an Olympics. You can't just go like, I want to play these four events in a row, and I want to play them on multiplayer. If you're playing in multiplayer, you have to do one event, then go back to the menu and do another event, and then back to the menu and do another event. Like, fucking hell, why can't you just make your own list of events? It's ridiculous. They're idiots. How dare they?
Could you do that before? I didn't remember that. But I played the handhelds.
That's the first one I majorly played, so I don't know if you could do it before, but it seems like the most basic possible thing to let you do multiple events in a row and then have a winner.
That's kind of what the Olympics are for, right?
That'd be cool.
But they don't let you. It's very frustrating, and you know it relates to Paper Mario in no way.
Everything goes back to Paper Mario.
All roads lead to Donkey Kong 64. Unfortunately.
All roads lead. There you go. It is kind of getting late, so we should wrap things up here. But I do want your final thoughts on Mario. Like, okay, assume someone has not played Paper Mario Thousand Year Door, and the remake is coming out, and you have to do a short pitch to kind of give them to play. What do you say? You start, Stuart.
What else are you going to spend your 50 quid on? Sorry, that's...
There you go.
I guess what I say is, like, it's a game that's, like, everywhere you go and every room you go in is going to have some element of character to it, even if it's just a Goombella when you press the X button or whatever, giving you some info about the room. And I'm pretty sure she has different info for every single space in the game.
Yep.
Yeah.
So no matter where you go, there is something interesting to do or see. The combat is really weird but fun in a way.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's rewarding. It's got a lot of inputs you can do, like, you know, the stylish moves, the sort of hidden stylish things you can do to get more kudos from the crowd. And the world is just so diverse and interesting and full of showing off how many sprites you can fit on the screen.
It does have those moments. Everyone's
which still looks stuff. Impressive.
Yeah, it really does.
Considering the game on the GameCube running at 60 frames per second, it looks amazing to this day.
It does.
I think.
Absolutely.
I just think if you want to play like a game that's going to consistently be fun and it's going to be entertaining, and yes, it is quite challenging, this is the one. Like, this is what you should play. Of all of the Mario RPGs, I think this is the one I would say is the best one.
I would say that's of
the RPGs, not of the Paper Mario series.
Yeah.
And this is just my unusual opinion, and I appreciate that, you know.
What about you, David?
Peach gets naked in it.
Well, there's your pitch. You win.
I don't know if I really have much more to add to that. I was going to mention the combat is a lot. If you like what was in Super Mario RPG, it's like that, but at the same time, it's more streamlined and yet more evolved. Mm-hmm. It's more like Mario focused plus like one sidekick character instead of managing three different characters.
Yes.
And I think Stu hit pretty much all the major points there.
Sorry for being so efficient.
No, I really value efficiency, but I totally agree. The combat is very interesting to me because, as you said, David, it is streamlined. And maybe that is one problem I have with the game is that once you get comfortable with a partner, you don't tend to change them out. And like, I just kind of always used Koops. And I feel like maybe I was missing out because there's so many original fun characters. And each character has a skill that will help you along. Like we mentioned, Goombella's Tattle, I think it's called. Mm-hmm. So it's just a great, fun, joyous RPG. I'm really looking forward to the remake. There's really no other pitch for it other than it's a great RPG. And what do you want from RPG? You want great music, which you got, with great story, which you got, great characters, great journey. Everything's great, except for maybe the backtracking. But we'll see what Nintendo does about that.
Should we super briefly talk about Vivian at all?
I'm kind of curious to see what they're going to do with Vivian, because I have a feeling, like, just to reiterate to our listeners, like, Vivian was presented as, she is transgender. Some people say, like, she's a crossdresser, just a crossdresser, but I think the canon, and in Italy, apparently, like, the translation says explicitly, she is transgender and happy with that choice, which is, I think that's fine, but we know the internet's going to explode. And I don't know what Nintendo is going to do. I feel like they're going to keep it that she is actually like transgender, and that would be fine with me. I mean, or they're just, I don't know.
I mean, how is it presented in the like US release? How do they present that?
In the US one, basically, she's presented as female, and her sisters just basically call her like, you know, ugly and all this stuff.
Right,
even though
they're
the more crone witch like, and she's like the more cuter kind of.
She's like very effeminate. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. I love Vivian. She makes me cry.
Vivian is awesome. Yeah, yeah.
But I didn't use her in battle very much, to be honest.
That was going to be actually probably one other thing I was going to say as far as like, you know, pitches. If you want a game with like Mario characters to fall in love with, this one is full of them. Mm-hmm. I have like basically this kind of plush Goombella backpack that someone made for me to use like for cosplay. Nadia, I ended up basically customizing a Koopa Troopa plush into Koops for her. So. Yeah. I mean, it's that kind of level of, like, getting attached to these Mario characters.
Yeah, they're really likable characters. It's a great cast. It's a fantastic game. It's like, if you don't see the appeal of this game, then you have probably got serious problems. You should get checked out.
You did. You have a very, very strong case of cynicism and go to the doctor.
The Soul of Stone.
Absolutely. But this was actually a great episode. I think we're all very excited about Mario RPG in general, and especially Thousand Year Door. And I was... really great to talk to you guys about it.
I'm probably more excited about it now than I was when we started.
There you go. That's what podcasts do to you, man.
Same. Yeah.
That's what I'm here for. I'm here to stoke the fires.
I mean, going back to Paper Mario 2 for the Thousand Year Door for this podcast was just almost revelatory, because I was like, I remember this being a little bit bland, but not the exact opposite. I was completely wrong. It's great.
I'm glad to hear it still holds up. That's good news for everyone involved. Stu, why don't you go ahead and just tell us what you're up to and who you are and where you can find you.
Okay, I'm a Retronaut. Hello.
You are.
I do episodes of Retronauts that are about things that nobody else would ever do, such as Asterix, which is coming up in multiple parts. We have the absolute exhaustive Asterix games overview that went on and on and on, because it turns out there's a lot of Asterix games. I also wrote a book which came out recently, which is All Games Are Good, and you can get it through Limited Run and probably through Amazon by the time this goes out. And what it's about is about my it's a sort of A to Z of things I've written about games that are erring towards the positive, and trying to cover games that the games that I grew up playing that won't necessarily be everyone's upbringing, because mine was odd. Like, I had a Master System, then I had nothing forever, and then I had a PS2. I missed that whole thing. I only caught up later with emulators and then reading magazines. So I was reading magazines and going like, this looks like the best game ever. And then I'd get to play games, and I would just be so enthralled by the whole idea of games that I ended up liking pretty much everything. You wouldn't know it if you looked at my Twitter feed, though, at Stupacabra, where I just bitch all day.
You do. I can affirm.
I bitch all day, and then I go on podcasts and talk about how much I love everything. So look forward to that.
You're a person of dual nature.
As the world's only living, breathing urban champion fan, I can certainly appreciate that.
I respect that. I respect the hustle, you know.
Absolutely. David, why don't you tell us a bit about yourself? I think I know you, but some people don't.
Okay, well, I'm not a retronaut per se, but I do keep myself busy writing for Nintendo Force magazine and largely on the Mega Man Network at the mmnetwork.com. I need to get back to writing on my own personal, like, other stuff, non-Mega Man stuff website, poisonmushroom.org, but you can still find some fun stuff I've posted there over the years. And let's see. Yeah, I'm on Twitter at LBD_NYTETRAYN and at the MM Network if you just want a deluge of Mega Man content. Let's see. Also, I stream with Nadia periodically on the Nightworks Twitch channel. We just did Mega Man 5 last night.
Yes, we did. That was painful.
Tell them about the Mega Man Robot Master guides and stuff.
I was just about to, but I also want to mention I'm also on Blue Sky. Same names, but minus the underscore in that one case because they don't use underscores. And yeah, Nadia and I were both published in the Mega Man Robot Master Field Guide Update Edition. Covers all the major characters in the original series up through Mega Man 11. The Mega Man X Maverick Hunter's Field Guide, which was a fun little twist on the concept.
I got them both. They're really good.
Thank you.
Glad you liked them. They were fun. Awesome. Especially the Mega Man X stuff was fun to write. Like, that's my element right there.
I want to work on my own sort of version of it called Sonic Characters I'd Like to See Dead.
I could write a book about that. That'd be good.
Blaze isn't on the list, I hope.
Well, I mean, it's all of them, isn't it? It's just all of them.
At least you're impartial.
Just a pile of dead furries. That's all we want here, I guess.
I'm a huge fan of Sonic. That's why I hate it so much.
That makes sense.
That tracks, really.
Yeah. As for me, I'm Nadia Oxford. I am also the co-host of the Axe of the Blood God podcast, which is a RPG podcast about RPGs, old, new, Eastern and Western. Please support our folly at patreon.com/bloodgodpod. And it goes without saying that you should support Retronauts as well. We have several tiers to slot your bling into. Like, we have a $3 tier that lets you access episodes a week early. There's a $5 tier that gets you two Patreon-exclusive episodes, as well as everything else I just mentioned. And the Nintendo 64 tier. For $64, you get the privilege of setting a Retronauts topic once every 6 months, I believe. And you get everything else, of course.
You could force us to talk about Awesome Possum for 2 hours.
Can. Awesome Possum kicks Dr. Machino's butt.
I'm awesome. You're not so awesome.
If you have to say you're awesome, you're not awesome. I mean, come on.
Agreed. I'm on that to Machino's side.
You can also find me at Nadia Oxford on The Bad Place, which is Twitter, and the maybe it'll be Bad Place someday, Blue Sky, same name.
Pretty bad.
And that is it for us. And until next time, don't worry about paper tigers. It's paper dragons you should worry about.